Welcome to Your Q, an open invitation to come together, collaborate, and take action towards a more connected, informed, and thriving Douglas County. Your Q is all about celebrating, uplifting, and educating our community. Each week, we'll highlight the people, ideas, and organizations making a difference, and invite you to join us in shaping the future of Douglas County. Supported by the Ford Family Foundation and brought to you by Roseburg Schools. And now, Your Q on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Q. Thank you so much for joining us. We've had a great episode today, Tiffany. I'm really excited about this episode. We're going to talk more about something that I think I need some work on.
Same.
And it's the concept of wellness. And it's a broad topic. And we brought in some experts today to help us rumble with us a little bit today. And wellness, I think sometimes when I think about wellness, I think about kind of diet and exercise, and it clearly can be that. But there's a broad kind of road of wellness that involves, I think, much more than that.
So
that's right. You know, it can be just in general, just kind of how our mental health is, our relational health is. It can even delve into our financial health, our spiritual health. And I've wondered at times for me, I think there's a high correlation to where I felt like the times that I'm most proud about and probably been of most service to the people I love is probably been that's a balance. And I think there's a lot of synonyms for wellness that are corollaries to that around, you know, purpose and fulfillment and joy. So we really want to explore this concept of wellness. I think it's so important to talk about in our community, and we've got some great guests with us today. Thank you very much.
Because it's not simple. It's super complex, you know, but I'm very thankful that you guys are here.
It is, and hopefully we can kind of unpack that in an optimistic way today and think more broadly about in our community about wellness, whether that be individually, in our homes, in our community, in our schools. Thank you very much for being here. We've got some great guests with us. Reed, I'm going to start with you. If you want to just introduce yourself to the group and talk a little bit more about kind of who you are and what you bring to this conversation. Yes.
Okay, so I'm Rita Berry. I've been in the Roseburg community for 2 years. This is my third summer here. I think we keep kind of a low profile, so this is unusual for me. But I am a family medicine doctor at Aviva Health. And there I split my time between patient care, and then I am a faculty at the family medicine residency program. And so I do a lot of family medicine resident precepting and teaching.
That's great. Thank you. And thank you for your work with that. It's been great in our community. Thank you. Hi, Betty.
Hi. My name is Betty Simon. I am an author. I wrote a book about my life experience. It's an 11-chapter book, and every chapter is a miracle for me to be alive. I'm a speaker. I share messages about hope, resilience. I just want to give up. I always say that as long as you're still breathing, there is hope. The story is not over yet.
Yeah, I love that.
Yes, and I'm also a life coach. I work with moms, especially new moms, because when I had my twins, I have twin boys that are 10 years old, going in fifth grade, I struggled a lot. I struggled with my health. I just struggled a lot. And I feel like if I can hold a new mom's hand and walk with her through her new role as a mom, that brings joy to me. So I'm a life coach.
Love that.
Such an important part of wellness.
Lovely. Thank you. Hi, Lauren.
Hi there. My name is Lauren Haddock. I also work at Aviva Health with Dr. Berry. I split my time. I'm a VP of Clinical Operations, but I'm also clinically trained as a registered dietitian as well. And kind of seasons of life have changed for me as well. So I am born and raised in Douglas County. I have a young family. And so kind of what wellness has looked like for me has also evolved over time, is kind of moving into that phase of my life. And it is very challenging. And so I'm kind of excited to kind of talk about that spin and orientation today and how that might apply to others.
That's great. Thank you.
I'm John Demoff. I'm the Strategic Partnership Director for Thrive Umpqua, and I'm also the Executive Director for an organization called Food as Medicine Orion. And I've been in the county for, I have to think, about 30 years. I wasn't born and raised here, but I moved here pretty young. And I've grown to appreciate Douglas County, all its beauty and all its aspects, its culture. And like my wonderful team here, I really enjoy helping people. And so that's my passion. That's why I'm involved in all these organizations.
That's great. It's great. So let's talk a little bit about wellness. I would be curious about, you know, how you would define wellness. You obviously, you know, work with moms, see patients, and work in industries that are focused on wellness. And so when you think about wellness, I mean, what comes to mind for you? How would you, define what wellness looks like?
It's a great question because it's viewed as so broad. And in a negative sense, some people think it's rather ambiguous. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it can be defined and it can be measured, which is kind of cool. So to me, that's always been fascinating to look at all of that and like how to actually lay it out for people to see. So in fact, wellness does involve many different things. Like you, it was beautiful what you said in the beginning, how you laid out some of these different aspects. And so we could see it's not really one thing. And that's the common misconception that a lot of people get hung up on, that wellness depends on one thing solely. When in fact, what we see is that when it comes to personal well-being, there isn't one thing that's solely responsible. It's a lot of little things all adding together. So that's one of the reasons Thrive Umpqua came to this region and started in this region, is because we needed something to coalesce around to support people in learning about well-being. So wellness isn't, for me, it's just to answer your question, it's not defined by one thing. It's about all those things, whether some of the things you said, whether it's in your mind, what we think, how we feel, which isolation, depression is so, mental health is so important. We know in Oregon that we're at the lower rankings in compared to other states in the country in terms of mental health. So, you know, that's really valid here. But it's also the movement part, which we have a wonderful environment. We have wonderful trails to walk around and enjoy. Nature is really conducive to movement. So we've got to really support that. But a big one is that social part that's really like lacking so much in our institutions now, where there's that safety and that ability for people to come together and do healthy things together, right? But you mentioned one which is not well known, and that's the purpose part. A lot of people pass that by and they said, what does that mean? But you mentioned that. So maybe we'll get into that a little bit later. But just to highlight, we don't focus on one thing. Really, it's all the facets of what we do with our mind, what we put in our mouth, and what we do with our hands and feet.
I agree. I think one of the things that I find when I work with patients is talking about quality of life, because there are so many variables that go into that. A lot of what, almost everything that you just mentioned, but also a lot of people, when you give them the opportunity, I always ask them what it means to them. Like, what does that look like to you? What does wellness look like to you? Or what are your goals? Because my goals for them as a clinician is not maybe the same as their goals. And so I kind of flip it back on them, because it has to be their goal, their idea. We can help provide that counseling and that education, but at the end of the day, quality of life, like, how do you feel and what makes you feel good? And so I think that has been successful for me when I work with patients. And then it leads us kind of down, you know, talking about these things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And to me, wellness involves everyone. Personally, that's how I feel, is the more other people are well, the more they're doing better, we are all having a wonderful life. So it is not just personal. It's not just me, but involving other people, having your children healthy, having your husband taken care of, having your wife or friend, a neighbor, and to always think, how can I do better? What can I do that will help somebody live a better life, have a better quality of life? Sometimes I see, not to point fingers, but sometimes I see like somebody smoking in the car with the children in there. And I'm like, it's not just affecting you, but it is affecting also the children, and the windows are up or just cracked open a little bit. So it's huge. And if we can think it as a community and not just as an individual, so that, I think that to me as well.
So important, because in a lot of ways we have a duty to help others to be more well.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is reflective of our own wellness as well. Because like you said, with purpose, that's such an important part of wellness, is that we feel we have a purpose. One of the interesting things, I think, so you had studied psychopharmacology, which is the study of how medicine affects the brain. And so I really love that you went from that and it just led you into lifestyle medicine. Can you explain to us what's behind that passion? What fueled that?
Yeah, so just to go back a little bit, when I was at the University of Cincinnati, that was the field that I was excited about, psychopharmacology. And the reason was, back at that time in my early 20s, I thought I could find, wouldn't it be great to find the magic pill that's responsible for happiness or anything that we want in life, to improve our quality of life? Could we discover that? I became kind of disillusioned when my professor at one point said, there's no such thing as psychology or spirituality. Everything is chemicals. Everything's biology. And I just couldn't accept that. I thought, this isn't for me. It's like, there's got to be a humanity behind all of this. And I decided to go the other direction. And from psychopharmacology, I decided to look into, back then it wasn't called lifestyle medicine, but it was, in a sense, what do people have to do in their lives to keep from having to take those pills? like I would say, maybe people might relate to it more as prevention. Right? And so for me, it was a personal journey over the past 25 years now, looking at the examples that are there around people kind of, in a sense, empowering themselves. Like, you know, this question of like, what does it mean to you? Like, that is how people enact change, when they believe it themselves. But not everybody always sees that horizon of what's possible. And I decided to find out, like, what is possible? What are people doing to achieve the most incredible rates of health and longevity? And so I started studying that. And I looked at, there's a lot of examples out there, a lot of examples, including the Blue Zones, which is the longest lived cultures on the planet. They're longevity hotspots. And when I realized that there are actually studies, there is valid research showing that people can enact change on themselves and their community, that they can influence their personal health and the health of their own community.
That's so cool that, you know, I didn't realize that Blue Zones is based on data from the most healthy places.
Yeah, so Blue Zones is kind of the affectionate name for research on longevity and what are researched, validated longevity hotspots. And, you know, Blue Zones project started in Douglas County, for those of us who are around, in 2017. And the story of how that came here is really fascinating, in that it goes back to a research project that was funded by National Geographic and the National Institutes of Health, where they actually formed a team of epidemiologists, demographers, scientists, to go around the world and look at these kind of hearsay rumors of places where people were like, we're 124, and we're like, you know, and we're sitting up here in the mountains enjoying life, drinking vodka and smoking cigarettes, you know? Yeah. And when people were scratching their heads, like, okay, maybe that's true, but how can we bring in the science to validate that? And in fact, what they found was that they couldn't. In fact, a lot of it was disproved. So there was a really passionate team of kind of debunkers who were going around finding that there isn't valid science to show this. But then they actually found places where people were reaching age 100 at 30 times the rate as they are in the United States. And that was the start of this kind of this phenomenon of research showing that longevity and health overall isn't just genetics, it's about lifestyle and culture. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of research studies on that, but now people just call them Blue Zones. And there's five that are confirmed on the planet where people are living longer and staying healthier and having a great quality of life, which is, honestly, that's the bottom line, is like, no one wants to be healthy and sick in bed with oxygen taking 20 pills. That's often what we have to do. That people want to live a long time, but also be like enjoying it and have a great quality of life. So that is what Blue Zones Project brought to Douglas County in 2017. But people mistake often that means we're a longevity hotspot. It's quite the contrary. Mm-hmm. It's quite the contrary. The project goes where help is needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Rita, you see patients, and part of your responsibility is
giving advice and thinking about quality of life, and what things kind of resonate with you with that conversation?
Yeah, I think I like to start kind of the same way that Lauren does, which is asking people just, what are your health goals? Mm-hmm. And that's similar to asking, you know, what would wellness look like for you? And see what they say. Many people have goals of getting off medications. Mm-hmm. Most people are on many medications. Mm-hmm. I share that goal for them. Mm-hmm. And so then it's just a matter of looking at lifestyle interventions that can help treat the conditions that those medications are being prescribed for. And people get really excited about that. Mm-hmm. Those are, you know, those are goals that I'd share with the patients.
Yeah.
It's not all just about writing prescriptions all day. That's not what anyone went to med school to do.
And I think for me, when we talk about those things, I know you say they're small, but they're actually pretty significant. And I think that's one thing that I'm always going to remind it is those small things, they add up over time and they are significant in the grand scheme of things. And so it's like really celebrating, because as providers, that burnout is so hard. I mean, I know you giggled when he said that we're not a hot spot. We know we're not.
Yeah,
a hot
well,
spot,
because right? I was in Klamath Falls doing residency during when Klamath Falls was on Blue Zones.
Yeah.
And so it was another area that was selected for having a long ways to go.
Yeah. And so we're here to improve it, right? And so those wins, you celebrate them as a provider, you celebrate those with your patients, because the small things do matter. Those little choices that you make today do add up over time, because it's really not all or nothing either when it comes to wellness. And that's an unreasonable expectation that we're going to fall short of regularly. And so it's those little things that really do mean a lot. And when we can share those with our patients too, it's a win-win.
Yeah.
And then it's just having, you know, reasonable expectations and small achievable goals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because perfect isn't real. And it really requires people, you know, making priorities and identifying like small specific things that they can work on. Because you can't just have magic and now you're well.
Yeah, I imagine it could look really and feel really overwhelming for people when they look at their goals, especially if they're not, if their lifestyles aren't, you know, if they're less than ideal and they're looking at this huge like goal where it's like, oh my gosh, that feels so big. But you're sitting here and you specialize in hope and resilience. And I think those things are so important for people. What, you know, to get themselves to a confidence, to get themselves to a place where they can you know, face those goals head on and know that like, hey, I'm going to take small steps towards this. What would you like to share with our community about the hope, like applying hope in that when people feel that feeling of overwhelm, how would you encourage them to find hope?
I love how you say to celebrate. Celebrating is very, very huge. I remember when I was writing that book, I hired a company to help me, because I didn't know what I was doing besides writing the stories. But this is what my coach emphasized. She emphasized celebrating, you know. You write one page, you celebrate. So even with hope is broad and it is huge. And if you tell somebody, oh, you get some hope. No, it's not like a cup of water that I'm going to drink it. But how do I come from one little step to another step? How do I move from being so discouraged that I don't want to wake up, but maybe just get up to go to the bathroom. Celebrate that. Not wait to have a huge milestone done, but just a little bit. Even to just get out of bed and sit by the side of your bed. Mm-hmm. Celebrate that. It's kind of like looking at your garage and you want to clean it and it is so huge, so many, you know. But if you say, I will just clean this little section, when you're done, you're like, oh, I can see the floor now, you know. So with even hope, it's not, you're not going to shut down that cup of water and, oh, now I have hope. But just a little step at a time, one step at a time towards what you want to do or what you want to achieve, what you want to get. When I work with moms, quite often they come when they're discouraged, you know. They're like, I don't know what I'm doing. This is hard. I'm like, okay, how about if the baby sleeps for 2 hours? Can we celebrate that? Because my boys were so bad at sleeping. So I totally understand that. Yeah, it is just to take a step at a time and to celebrate it. And I also love the idea of writing down things. What did I do today that I feel like I accomplished, at least even if just a tiny bit? Then tomorrow, add on a little bit. Then the other day, add on a little bit.
Good advice.
Yeah, so when we write things down, it really becomes tangible. Yeah. And so we are actually going to take a quick break, but we will be right back. So stay with us.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
The conversation continues shortly. This is Your Cue on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. This is Your Cue, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to Your Cue. Really great conversation. Yeah. It's really fun to kind of dig into this conversation. We talked about some ways that you're finding success with the people you're working with. This is great. I'm curious about some of the barriers to wellness that we see in 2026 in Douglas County. John, you talked a little bit about some of the not comorbidity factors, but there's some real things to celebrate here, but also what are you seeing either from a clinical perspective or a coaching perspective, in terms of some of the barriers we have in our community around wellness?
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't talk about wellness if we didn't have the opposite. And we wouldn't have Thrive Umpqua as our community's wellness initiative. We wouldn't have that if there wasn't the opposite to play off of. And so, you know, in fact, we wouldn't even have a hospital. Mm-hmm. Take away some of the basic things like childbirth if we weren't dealing with all the opposite. So we can't ignore that. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Just looking at Southern Oregon, it's fascinating. Not a lot of people realize that the southwest part of Oregon, these counties, have the highest mortality rate than all of Oregon, which is interesting. And it's a reality not often people want to look at, but we have to understand it. Also, for those people who are concentrating on mental health, Oregon is at the bottom in a number of different mental health measures in the United States. And everybody, at least in my sphere that I work with, is aware that Douglas County is at the bottom of Oregon County health rankings. We're improving a little bit, but we're generally at the bottom. So not to get too doom and gloom, but the need is there. And so what is really powerful is to try and show people what they can do that can make a difference. And time again, what I've seen is when people do make changes, when they are given the ability and support to make changes, they will see some benefit to that, however small. And that benefit is the best motivator. Mm-hmm. When someone experiences some type of wellness, whatever that means to them, whether it's on a mental level, social level, physical level, which is all possible, that's truth of like, hey, I want more of that. Mm-hmm. And they can then be ready to take that next step. And so that progression is why we call it lifestyle, because it's not just a quick fix. It's a whole attitude from everything we are, everything we think, everything we do, everything we say of like, how am I going to live a life and make choices in my life that accumulate into what I want to get? And that's, for me, that's hugely important, I'm sure, for your work too.
Yeah, and there's a level of awareness that, like, self-awareness that we have to have in order to listen to our bodies and listen to our, like, where we're at to understand what our needs are too.
When we used to do a lot of lifestyle classes, we would rely upon what people call anecdotal data, which is very important, but you can question it. And so things like, well, my pants are loose. Mm-hmm. I feel better. You know, like, you're like, I'm getting up earlier. All these things, you know, they're very important. But when you're working with like population health data and you're working to try and measure it, you really try to look for how can you quantifiably like record it. And so now we have a great partnership with the Food as Medicine Oregon class, the Lifestyle Nutrition course, where people get actually a blood draw before and a blood draw after, and they can look at things like cholesterol, like hemoglobin A1C, like BMI, and actually see like, well, I feel good, but this is on paper. Right. And those are benefits. They're not the only benefits that people see. But in general, I would say like how can we encourage people to feel good about their progress, which you can't underrate optimism.
And I think we were talking about barriers, and you made a really good point earlier about, you know, we see all these unrealistic expectations or people really only show us when they're at their best, and we don't really talk about what's not working and when they're at their worst. And you talk about healthcare and nutrition education. If you kind of think about it, and this is maybe something you were going to bring up, is we have such a finite amount of time with patients. And so how do you, because when you do education and counseling, you have to do some motivational interview. You have to set goals.
but you also have to do all of these quality things of care. Did you get your, you know, breast exam? Have you done your, all of these things that we have a lot of unreasonable expectations for providers and clinicians, and your time for that education just is so reduced. And so they do have to go hand in hand to be successful, right? And we do tend to work in silos in those boxes like you're talking about. And so healthcare providers have to focus on the top three things. Gosh, what is really going to be really important? When I want to spend an hour talking to this patient about their diabetes, because an hour is not even going to be enough, but it's going to be a good start. And so I think that, you know, just the time in which we have available to do these things and some of these expectations that are out there and the misinformation, and then you can spend half your conversation with your patients or your friend combating this misinformation that's out there. And so I think that's a huge barrier, is we're not getting help from the globe with everything that's out there. And I see that as a huge barrier, but that's where we do have to lean on our community education availability, you know, refer to dietitians if you can, or community nutrition education, or work within the school system, because the schools do have some really awesome opportunity to start really young when you're the one providing snacks for the preschool class, mm-hmm. right? And so those really small things can make a difference too. But I think there's just a lot of those pressures that we all feel about time and misinformation that's a real barrier that we have to be talking about and bringing some awareness to.
My experience, I've been attending some of the lifestyle nutrition courses that that John puts on, and I've had some of my own patients in that class. And it's been really neat to see them absorb the education over the amount of time that the class covers, because I was watching them and other people in the class react to some of the content, and they're just like, no one's ever told me this before, I've never heard anything like this, like, you know, my doctor's never told me this, and I'm going, wait a minute, I do that all the time. I think I do this all day, every day, but it happens so fast, and we're in such a rush, and people are stressed out already from being at the doctor's and having lots of other things to keep track of, and also I change their medicines and order them these tests, and they have this list of homework to do. It really doesn't have time to sink in, and so I just think that the things like the lifestyle and nutrition course are such a boon for everyone. And so so personally, like, I try to include it, but also like fall back on the resources that we have. And I've been doing that more and more because I've seen how beneficial it is to have people have that education packaged and delivered like in these larger chunks of time.
Yeah. I'm seeing this theme emerge, which is a quote I heard years ago, which is, you know, you can be the architect of your own destiny. And it seems like if you're listening, or you have people that you know that kind of feel at their wit's end with wellness, whether that be their mental health or the sense of isolation, whether it just be they just don't feel well physically, I think a message for the community I'm hearing from my professionals here is there's change can be made, which is in itself optimistic. If you're like, wait, I can actually, there's something I can do. And we do have some great resources in the community. I would be curious to talk a little bit. We touched in the first segment a little bit about habits, and whether from a coaching perspective or a meso or macro perspective, or from that individual micro of working with a specific patient. I'm curious about what you see in terms of wellness. It could be broadly defined, but what habits do you see? Sometimes those simple habits. I think it was Einstein that was credited with this, the quote that sometimes the greatest innovation is simplicity, right? What have you seen in terms of maybe habits that could have profound impact, but maybe simple, that have led to shifts in your work?
I think that dietary shifts are probably the things that make people feel better most quickly. Increasing plants and fiber in the diet can make a big difference, decreasing processed foods. People can feel better from making a change like that within a matter of weeks. And so I think that's something that's a nice focused habit to start with. It has to come when people are ready. And often that means like having some sense of self-worth, having their basic needs met, and being able to think about how can I, you know, now like optimize things a bit in my health. I think that those changes can be felt most quickly, And a change like that trickles down into other things like mental health and sleep. And it can be the starting point to experience some inertia. And that's where people, you know, develop hope for the future. Like, mm-hmm. they're actually feeling better. There's what I would call it, like, clinical inertia. Mm-hmm. So that's where you're at the sweet spot, where if someone's making a change and it's working for them, the more you work on that change, the better it will get. And you're trying to, like, make a snowball roll down a hill, but in a good way.
Yeah.
And so it's getting someone off onto that kind of a journey. And I just think that plants in the diet and decreased processed foods, a nice place to start.
Okay. That's great. Great advice. Yeah. That's great advice.
You know, wellness, it being so broad, it's like mind, body, and soul, right? There's different areas, and like physically, those habits are so important to have our bodies be functional out of where we need them to be. But like, as far as like the mind and the soul, how would, Betty, you work a lot more in this area. What would you say some habits that are?
So a simple habit that I can say is reading. People don't pay a lot, not many, but some people don't really pay attention to how much you can learn from reading. And some people are like, oh, once I'm done with school, I'm done reading. I've done my share. That's enough. But I'll tell you, reading is very important because we learn a lot. I'll give an example on myself. A friend of mine recommended a book. The title is The 5 a.m. Club. I got something from that book that has helped me, that has changed the habit that I had. I used to sleep in. I used to be a late person, sleep late. Everybody has gone to bed. I'm still trying to see, is the dishes done? Is this done? Is the floor clean? As a mom. And I would sleep so late, then I would sleep in and wake up and I'm tired and I'm grumpy and I'm like, you know, the kids are, mom, it's almost time to go to school. I'm like, where are your shoes? Or this? But then this book is encouraging people to wake up at 5 a.m. and the first thing they want you to do is to do some kind of exercise. I started doing that, and believe it or not, it changed my life. Just a simple habit of reading, by reading just that particular book. And then I started waking up at that time. My husband wakes up at that time because he has to be at work at 6. And then I do that exercise. They tell you to do meditation. They tell you, if you're a prayer person, then pray, read something, you know. So I started incorporating those things. And then pretty soon I'm even doing my own things before even the kids get up, and I feel energy. I'm not like grumpy and all these things. So if just a simple thing like that, just like reading, because you never know what you read in a book or a journal or somewhere, how impactful it can be in your life.
Yeah. And so your point with the morning routine, that is so key. I know for me, because it's like when you carve yourself that time, the rest of the day is so different, right? In the morning, there's that peace and quiet. It's like this idle time. The rest of the world is not busy and fast and moving. And it really allows us to sit in that space of peace and to be present with ourselves. So I think that's really important. So you had mentioned also that you're taking a Tony Robbins class.
Yes.
What are some of the concepts that you're learning in that class?
The class I'm taking, it was encouraging people to use their experiences to make impact in people's lives. So not to take it lightly that what you've gone through is for no reason. Mm-hmm. He gives a little bit of a picture of being in a maze, you know. Somebody who is in it doesn't know, how do I navigate? How do I get out? But if you've been there and you figured out the way you've got out, you can be like, you know what? If you take the right and turn to the left and go straight forward, you will get out of this maze you're in. So that is really key in his teaching that I'm really finding to be, that we don't want to be selfish. We want to share. We want to be able to share what we've gone through, what we know, with other people, you know, because that's how we are going to help each other, because this is a community. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know something, tell somebody. Yeah. Kind of like when they say, you see something, say something. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you've lived through something that you can encourage someone else who is going through it, in a positive way and hold their hand. And I think that's beautiful.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Yes, and you are helping many people with your book here. So that's really exciting. This is From Orphan to Inspiration. And so one thing that I love, it says, in a world filled with uncertainty, illness, and personal trials, many hearts grow weary and discouraged, but even in the darkest moments, hope still whispers.
That's right.
I love that. That can pertains to everything. There's always hope.
There's always hope back.
When we look at the longest lived cultures on the planet, that's one of the things that they observe, is that there's a large sense of community cohesion where people not only feel safe to interact, but they feel a value that someone, just because of their age, it doesn't matter. You'll find 9-year-olds interacting with 90-year-olds, and there's this kind of intermingling where everybody feels a sense of value that they can contribute something to someone else, but they're also willing to listen and exchange. And I've read this, where was this? Like last week I read this thing, and I haven't verified it, but I think it's true, where if someone looks into the eyes of a dog, their dog, and the dog looks into their eyes, they can measure an increase in oxytocin, you know? And so if it's true with a dog, it's got to be true with a human being too. You know, if there's that safety and we feel like a sense of connection, like there's like real physiological benefits that come out of that. Mm-hmm. And I think your experience, and what's so fascinating, is looking at the examples that are there and seeing like, okay, there's real examples, it's possible, but also the data and the science that shows like the underlying why this happens. Mm-hmm. That it's like, yeah, we have a process within us that will change according to the outer circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so that's what, for me, that's what helps it matter, mm-hmm. that wellness matters. Mm-hmm. Like doing these small things of having hope, which for me is also like goes, I'm sure you go into this in your book, like gratitude, you know, like the idea of like being grateful. Yeah. And all this stuff can be measured, right? It's like we can look at strategies for how each one of these things can be put on paper, and actually a little step can be taken towards each one.
Yeah, we didn't measure serotonin or endorphins, but anytime in the school setting, we've gotten like our veterans to meet with our kids. Mm-hmm. Or anytime you see like, you're gonna do like a tea with your mom, or you see these multi-generational things happen, mm-hmm. it's like magical. You see evidence of like mutual benefit, right? And you know, one thing that we've been talking about in the show a little bit is, you know, we have this epidemic of loneliness. It's certainly part of wellness to feel connected, right? But a small thing is just that invitation to do something together. And we do find something special happens when you get these, you know, kind of generations that can be independent with each other to cross, to have the kind of competence, the safety to be able to do something together. It is beautiful. And I think that is a small thing that does have a profound influence as well.
Yeah, it does. And it starts right in our homes, mm-hmm. you know, just having meals together. I think that was something that you had brought up when we had spoke earlier.
Yeah. So Tiffany and I had a conversation about that, because that's the season of life I'm in. I have littles and we're busy, and I do this. I get up early and I'm like, okay, I got 45 minutes to myself. Like, oh gosh, then I'm ready to get the nap to go. And one of the things that I really kind of set as in my home, and I encourage my patients to do this too with kids, is we're going to have dinner together and we're going to turn the TV out. And then after that, we are going to go outside to get some fresh air.
Yes.
And those are two really small things. And it's, I learned so much, and I'm so amazed when I watch my kids talk and, you know, what they say and what they eat in that moment, where I'm paying attention to them. I'm not on my phone. We don't have TV. What did you do today?
Yeah.
It means a lot. It's that social piece of it that I think that we just don't get enough of, but it's intentional. And it's, we're time to downshift together as a family, but it's social. And I carried that. I mean, I was raised that way. And I'm so grateful that that was an opportunity that I had. I forced all my roommates in college to be home for dinner. And it made a huge difference on just how we functioned as a household. And I really encourage that when I talk with others, is it's really not that, even if it's 15, 20, 30 minutes. Yes. If you don't have to get to go outside, that's okay too. But you have a goal and a set time to kind of just disconnect and just, hey, let's actually look at each other in the eyes and not send each other messages or memes or whatever. That is, it's small, but it is meaningful.
Yeah, I love that. Authenticity matters, right?
Yeah.
And in a world where I think relationships can feel like a short and a reel,
yeah.
and that we're actually engaging, right? And there's an interesting connectivity study UCLA has done for years, right? And I think the last time I read that, the average 18 to 24-year-old had less felt less connected than the average 72-year-old. And it's an irony, it's a paradox. We're in this world where we're supposed to be so connected with devices that actually we find we're less connected. And so that authentic relationship absolutely matters. It's great advice on the apps.
And being intentional about connection. So I also think, like, on a broader scale on our community, you know, I love the partnerships that Aviva and the organizations you're working with or, you know, have. So those partnerships are so important. So we connect in our homes, like with the people that we're around most, you know, and then we take it on the community and we connect with each other more broadly and organizations and businesses connecting with each other. So I think that's a wonderful partnership that Aviva and Food as Medicine Oregon and Thrive.
Oh, we're so grateful for that, that Aviva has opened its doors. We've been having the Lifestyle Nutrition course there for years, I think since the building's been built. And it's a wonderful, I think it's a wonderful compliment because busy people who are dealing with an enormous amount of work in terms of illnesses and acute care for the most part, as was said here, is like you don't have all the time that you need to connect and absorb, which is so essential. You know, it's like one of those ladders of needs, I believe, mentions that we need to feel like we matter. Okay? There's like a value there, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not going to get that from my phone. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get that from a screen, right? I get that from you and you and a reciprocal kind of acknowledgement that I exist, I matter. And we don't find that as safe to do, unfortunately, today. It generationally, it's changing. There was a bit more safety. Strangers going to strangers, new neighbors coming in and being greeted. So if that's the case, and we know that's the case, we got to give more value to these mechanisms. Like, for example, like all these little things of like putting a little more effort into saying hello, like having more occasions to interact. Yeah, but try a little bit harder for those of us who can, because we're helping other people feel like they matter, which is going to help them grow.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of interesting like ancillary benefits to that, right? We think about like, I mean, you've talked about the residency program. Like, how do we keep talent, recruit talent? When you go to consider a new community to move to, this concept of feeling connected and seeing these connections and seeing, you know, being seen and recognized and respected and actually seeing organizations work together, it's compelling. You see this in places where they've done this extremely well. These are, and they tend to be places that you want to be, because there's a sense of community there. So I do think there is a responsibility as a community, and these are great to expand those authentic partnerships that benefit the community.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the way that we can work together as a community to improve our own health and to improve the health of our community on a larger scale and really bring those numbers up that we're seeing.
Yeah.
It's important.
And again, it's doable. It's doable. It was a cycling club in England that took the 1% challenge. That 1% challenge, if you can get 1% better, right? And they find like it's 37x over the year if you do 1% better each day, right? So it's, I think there's just that sense of like, again, optimism, whether it's getting up at 5 a.m. I need to have some work to do on that. I guess I'm going to bed so late, it's part of it. But whatever the small shifts, I think
there's power in those small shifts. They matter.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the tricks we have to, not tricks, but things we have to acknowledge with our patients and the youth in general, people in general, is that every little thing matters. So there's a scientific study that's famous. It's one of the most famous population health studies in the United States called the Framingham Heart Study. And the Framingham Heart Study is responsible for giving us a lot of data that's responsible for how we treat heart issues. But there's a lot of other insights that came from it. They took thousands of people in a town, Framingham, Massachusetts, and basically followed them throughout the years of their lives, giving them regular health assessments. Now it's been going on since the late 40s, I think, late 40s. So they've got a huge amount of data. And with all of that data, they've been able to see things that haven't been seen before as far as how this community in Framingham, these thousands of people who are all in the same geographic vicinity, how they've impacted each other. And now they're able to show a picture where they're able to say that isolation and loneliness is contagious like the common cold. By measuring one little interaction between you and I that didn't go well and how it affected that person and how it slowly rippled out in a community. we wouldn't think of that, of like a little bit of depression, isolation impacting each other like that. But with enough people over time, it does. Mm-hmm. Now, the hopeful message is that if that's true, the opposite's also true. Happiness is also contagious. Mm-hmm. And saying hello, opening the door, smiling to someone, that actually can be measured to ripple out and affect the whole community in the positive over time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that. So true. Small and simple things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It just wins out. Well, this has been great. Really, really appreciate the discussion. There's so many takeaways from this. I do want to turn it back to you and give you a chance to share with our community kind of your cue, maybe things that we can think about as we get into our week and we think about within our homes and our community. So, John, we'll start with you. What's your cue for our community?
Well, I would say be realistic about where we're at and then make strategies of how to move forward, like small measurable things. And the theme of what we're talking about, is it being grateful for one thing each day, like one new thing each day? Is it getting 50 more steps in a day? Is it just saying hello to someone? Whatever it is it eating one meal with a little more fiber? Whatever it is, just do that one little thing and be happy about that and then increase that over time.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a similar theme. I feel like we're all kind of on that, the simple things, but it's not all or nothing. And I think that's one thing that if we have a bad day, when we make a bad choice, that doesn't ruin it, right? It's about moderation. It's this lifestyle that we're talking about. It's day in and day out. And so it's even, you know, as simple as, and I encourage people, choose some water instead of a sugar-sweet beverage and then celebrate that win. That's a big enough win to celebrate, right? They all are. And so it can be as simple as that. It's not all or nothing. It's those small choices that matter.
Yeah, love that.
Recently, I read a book. The title is Dopamine Kids. It talks about the screen, what it is doing to us, the processed food, what it is doing to us. So what I would say to our community is to be mindful, to work on your mind, to have a change in your mind towards whatever you're doing. Pay attention. Is what I'm doing helping me? Is it helping someone else? Is it going to take me forward or is it going to keep me stagnant? Just to always think a little bit and to be intentional. We've talked about intentionality and to do it, you know, just listening to it or reading it in a book and then you're not doing it. Because one of the things I started implementing after I read that book is no phone in the car. No gadgets in the car, no gadgets anywhere if we are eating dinner or any of that. So small steps, like we said. And then soon you're going to find out that you can survive without your phone. The kids can survive without their gadgets. And also another thing I can say to the community is find someone to be an accountability for you. Because sometimes it is hard to do stuff by yourself. Like yesterday, one of our neighbors came by and she's kind of struggling to get up. I'm like, I'm struggling to get up. How about we go together and do some exercise or something like that? So finding somebody you can do something that you struggle with, they will push you, they will help you, they will hold you, and you do the same for them. So just taking care of each other.
Love that. It's great advice.
I think the doctors and John really want to talk about this topic with patients, but we just get distracted and other things come before. And so I think what I would say is at your next doctor's appointment, if you can be ready and think about like what thing actually matters most to you for your health goals or your wellness goals, and specifically ask using those words like, you know, can I work on this with you? Or what would be some ways that I can work on this? And just be honest, that will help bring it more to the beginning and making sure you don't have to be grateful for that.
Great advice. I've never done that with my doctor.
Yeah, that's such great advice. Yeah, all around. You guys are all incredible. Thank you so much. We are not finished. We are going to our after show portion of this episode, which you're going to want to check out because we have some really knowledgeable, insightful guests today. So definitely want to join us at the Roseburg School's YouTube channel. And with that, we are going to wrap up the radio portion of this episode. So Douglas County, stay well and take care of one another.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Join us Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Or watch online on the Roseburg School's YouTube channel and the YourQ Facebook page. This show is built with our community, for our community. If you have an idea for a conversation that celebrates, uplifts, or educates Douglas County, or know someone we should feature, we'd love to connect. Reach out at YourQ at roseburg.k12.or.us or message us on Facebook.